Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Mick Rohrkraut.
And today we have a holiday episode for you. We are celebrating the 70th anniversary of White Christmas. I have to ask you, because we've done a number of holiday episodes over the run of our show. We've covered It's a Wonderful Life. We've also covered The Family Stone and The Holiday, I believe, on After Dark. We've even done a holiday movie draft. Where does White Christmas fall for you? Is this in your yearly holiday rotation? Is this a classic for you, one you watch every year? Or is this one that you actually just had to watch for the pod today?
This is one I watch nearly every year. It is in my rotation. It's such a lovely, classic holiday movie, or just a Hollywood movie in general. This is the first movie to be released in VistaVision, and I think that color just makes you want to revisit it. I love the saturation and all the design. It feels like this nostalgic Christmas movie, and I think it was for veterans at the time, people in the army also, when it was released in 1954, just based on what the characters are doing, where we open the movie. I love the music in it. That's a big part of this movie. And it just leaves you feeling so nice and cozy at the end. So yeah, it's definitely one that I love to rewatch. What about you? Is this a yearly watch for you?
Surprisingly, it's not. Which I say surprisingly because, you know, I love old Hollywood films, but we really are just an It's a Wonderful Life family. I think I've even watched Christmas in Connecticut and definitely Holiday Inn more than White Christmas. And I'm not really sure why, because it is a classic and I do enjoy it every time I return to it, but it just has never been on the rotation for me. I think what you're saying about it is right, though. I love the songs. I think that the Technicolor used is just beautiful. We have those glorious Edith Head costumes, from the blue lace in Sisters to the, I think, iconic costumes of the movie, which are those sort of what you imagine Santa to wear, but on the women and the men at the end. It really is just a marvel of a movie, especially when we think about films that were coming out in the 1950s. It's really nostalgic. And what's crazy about it is that it was the highest grossing film of 1954. It did very well at the box office. So if we're thinking about White Christmas and It's a Wonderful Life as being, I think, the two big classic Hollywood Christmas movies, this did much better than It's a Wonderful Life, which was considered to be a bomb at the time. And it was also Michael Curtiz's biggest hit. And remember, he made Casablanca too. So this is one in his filmography that I think people do still really love. Bing Crosby, also a huge star at the time. I think he was the top box office star. So huge movie star at the center. He has an incredible singing voice too, obviously. And even though, you know, White Christmas, the song, which we'll talk about, that was already incredibly successful and had won an Oscar for its use in Holiday Inn in the 40s. The way it's used here, I think, is really beautiful, as we get that opening scene in World War II on Christmas Eve. We're getting ahead of ourselves, though, or at least I am, so let's get into the description and some more information about the film. This is about two talented song and dance men who team up after the war to become one of the hottest acts in show business. In time, they befriend the beautiful Haynes sisters and team up to save the failing Vermont Inn of their former commanding general. This was directed by Michael Curtiz and stars Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye, Rosemary Clooney, and Vera Ellen. It was nominated for one Oscar for original song for Count Your Blessings Instead of Sheep, which maybe we actually start there. When you think of this movie, is that the song that you think of? Because we talk about that often in original song with that category, that sometimes they don't actually end up nominating the song that you think of from the film.
That's a perfect first question, because that's my first reaction. When you say that's the one nomination this film got and it's for that song, I'm like, what song? It's not even a song. It's like a tune. But no, it's not. That's pretty clear. You know, be it Sisters or Snow, I think those are ones that I think of immediately when I think of White Christmas. But like you said, That was from Holiday Inn, which is surprisingly not a movie I watch. Maybe I've seen it once or twice, but I don't watch that every year. So that's kind of funny. I think I probably should return to it. And then this movie does do up White Christmas a little bit differently than that movie. But yeah, it's not Count Your Blessings instead of Sheep. I appreciate the moment in the film, but not my favorite. Would you agree, or what would be your favorite song?
Yeah, I completely agree. And when I was prepping for this episode, I fully expected, because I think I remembered that it had a music nomination of some sort, I expected it to be for Sisters or for Snow. And then when I saw that, I thought, wait a second, which song is that?
So
because
weird.
I hadn't yet rewatched it, and I had to remember the moment in the movie when that came up. So I think it's a good song, but yeah, it's a funny example of when, like I said, the song that you associate with the movie or one of them maybe isn't the one that the Academy goes for. I agree with you. I think Snow is probably the most fun, and I really love that beautiful moment in the movie on the train where they create that Vermont mountain scene with a napkin and the little pieces of pine. I feel like that is such a beautiful, creative moment. And then when they all start singing together. So that's the one that I would go with personally.
Yeah, I agree. It's that cut to and the mountainside, and then they show up and there's absolutely no snow. It's 70 degrees. Yeah, I think the whole train sequence is fun. But where we start with the movie is on the battlefield. They have a talent show of sorts, and they're making this send-off for their general, General Waverly, played by Dean Jagger. He's leaving their troop. And just the way the camera starts off in the scene, we do see that like backdrop of the snow, and then it reels back and we see all of them, all of the army men and the performers and the backdrop. So I think some of this is that classic 1950s art direction. We have those beautiful painted backdrops. Great set design, I would say. It's not super showy or really the focus of the movie. So I think even though it's dialed down, I think it works. So they send him off, and then we get back to the Wallace and Davis of it all and their act as they tour. And then that is eventually how they meet the Haynes sisters. So I think it does move pretty seamlessly, and it's an enjoyable idea. It's a pretty harmless story to begin with. So I think that's what makes it a holiday movie that I return to pretty easily. Do you feel any certain way about like how we meet these characters, or preferring any over the other?
It's so interesting, because when I was watching this, I kept thinking of every single Hallmark Christmas movie, Netflix Christmas movie, every modern one is taking directly from White Christmas. Not necessarily it being set at wartime, although we do have some of those military-themed Christmas movies for sure. But the idea of maybe having two men who meet up with two women who happen to be sisters and pairing off, or having everything revolve around show business or a particular act at the holidays, that all feels very comfortable to a lot of holiday movies that we have. And I think this is the movie that does it the best. And I really think that the setup at the beginning is so beautiful. This Christmas Eve 1944 with those painted backdrops and staging it like that with the song White Christmas, I think is such a beautiful way to open the movie. And then, of course, how it ties in at the end, I think, as those bookends, is really nice. Bing Crosby, incredible voice as well. You can see right away that he's such a talented singer, too. And that also sets him apart, I think, from the other soldiers that he's with. And another interesting piece of this is how much of an opportunist really Phil is, because Phil is the one who wants to basically saddle himself up to Bob. He saves him from that wall that's crumbling down, and suddenly they're tied together as this pair. And he's the one who I think is really opportunistic with the things that come along that can then make them turn into this famous duo. So that idea too, that makes it feel more Hollywood and also aligned with the big studio musicals we would see at the time. So, and then all of these little plot details, you're right, it's easy to slip into, but there's also so much going on that feels very much, I think, of the time too. And okay, then they're, you know, going from the war, then all of a sudden there's this act, and then they get this letter, and then they end up going to watch the Haynes sisters perform. I really love that scene with sisters. I think especially as we see Rosemary Clooney and Vera Ellen performing this act, like I mentioned, in those blue dresses with the great lace and the high neck, the feathers, we have that great little comedic moment too of Phil and Bob, one of them commenting on the blue eyes and the other on the brown and realizing that they're both into a different sister.
Yeah, that gets into the camp of the moment, and it's very fun. That continues, obviously, when they're trying to stall and protect the sisters as they rush to leave, and they end up performing sisters in a similar outfit. It's not that same beautiful dress. There's no way they would have fit in that, but especially with Vera Ellen. The thing I always remember in this movie is just like how cinched her waist is.
It's tiny little waist. Yeah.
Insane. Insane. And the costumes are just so gorgeous and decadent that they accentuate every movement that she makes, every dance number. It's just magnificent watching her.
Well, Vera Ellen also was in On the Town, which I love, with Gene Kelly. And there, I think she has an even better match as a dancer, of course, because Gene Kelly is the greatest dancing actor, I think, in history. She's also from Ohio, like us, from Norwood, Ohio. We always have to point that out whenever anyone, we have a fellow Ohioan who we're covering. But she was a Rockette. And
well,
thinking of her, right, as a Rockette, which is, you know, one of the great Christmas traditions of New York, going to Radio City to see the Rockettes, you can just envision that so clearly when you're watching her dancing. There's a number later on in the film, too, where you actually can see her long legs, and she's just high-kicking. It reminds me a lot of when you get to see Anne Rankin dance and all that jazz. Like, you just know you're watching one of the more talented performers really in that type of art.
The high kicks, the splits, when she's in the splits and they lift her up, it's just crazy. Like, these dance numbers don't really add anything to this. It's just weird. We go into dance suddenly, but you are just so mesmerized by her. Like, I fall into it every single time. So it is definitely a joy in this movie.
Yeah. And she really is the scene stealer for me. The story really isn't focused on her. I think pretty quickly we pivot to it being a story much more about Bob in particular. I think he's like certainly our protagonist. And then, of course, because it's on Bob, his relationship with Betty. But Judy, to me, and Vera Ellen, like, she is the one who, any scene that she's in, I really am focused on her. I think I come away from this movie really thinking about her and her performance.
I agree. Before we get too far away from it, question. During Sisters, when it's Wallace and Davis performing, who would RuPaul sashay away?
That's a great question. And I actually think that he would make Bing Crosby slash Bob sashay away, because we have Phil, Danny Kaye, doing that little improv number with the feathers, which whenever anyone is lip syncing for their life on Drag Race, like, you can take your wig off, you know, anything like that. But if you incorporate a prop or really go off book, you're getting extra points.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. Davis absolutely steals the show. He has the comedy. It's kind of interesting that they wanted to cast Fred Astaire, but he declined the role. And I think he would have played this up even more. But I think Danny Kaye is great in this movie. And Wallace was feeling a little shy. I don't know. But they had fun with it.
Well, in the whole lead up to of why they're doing this, of just everything with the sisters and the landlord telling them that he's going to charge them $200 for burning a hole in the carpet and then having to get out of town, it leans into that 50s style of comedy that we would see in movies of this era, because that might have been a common thing landlords would do back then. I'm unfamiliar with that in particular, but I don't doubt it.
But then trying to get out of it by just running out the back window.
I know.
And calling a taxi. Like, what? Like, don't they have to pay you? There are a lot of logistics that don't make sense. But this is part of, again, that campy element of, now we have Phil and Judy, who are trying to become matchmakers for Bob and Betty. And so it's like, they're on the side. It's like nearly slapstick of them always in the corner. And you see them like, oh, look at us being mischievous, getting them together. And meanwhile, Bob and Betty are just fighting all the time. There's so many misunderstandings and they think it's working. So it's just so cheesy. Again, and they play it up, and by the end, it kind of blooms in this beautiful romance. But to get there, I would say some of it is a little kitschy.
Well, that's the thing about our favorite holiday movies. They don't make sense. That's okay. They're filled with little contrivances in the plot or characters behaving in ways you wouldn't expect them to. But we forgive them anyway. I mean, I was just watching The Holiday again the other night and nothing in that movie makes sense, but I love it so. But I do love that, you know, Phil gives the girls both his and Bob's tickets for the sleeping car for that train to New York. And Bob's reaction to not having a bed is exactly how I would react if I found out that my friend gave away our tickets to the sleeping car. And we suddenly had to be sitting in the club car all night from a trip from Florida to New York.
Right. And Phil's response is, well, you'd be sitting up on a plane anyways. And it's like, yes, but the trip would take 3 hours, not 12.
Right.
Like, it's totally different.
And again, like our favorite Christmas movies, just deciding on a whim that they're all going to go to Vermont instead, because that's where the sisters are booked to perform. I really love that. And as a former Vermont resident, I really do love that this is the central location and set piece in the movie is this Columbia Inn in Vermont, because it does look like that idyllic Vermont winter that you imagine, of course, with the exception of snow, because they don't have snow yet. But I love when they call Vermont, quote, New England's winter playground. That's such a great little detail. I also love how inexplicably it just says Vermont on their table, like when they're all sitting together, like they have that idea to go and it's just right there advertised.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we might as well just go to Vermont now instead of working in New York City, question mark. And then bringing the entire set of this Wallace and Davis show to this inn as if they could hold up like 50, 100. I don't even know how many people work on the show, but it's like not a small show. There are just so many components and it's like, there's no way this could actually happen.
Yeah, I do love that though, because when we get to the inn and the first surprise really, like I said, is that there's no snow, but the real surprise, and when the movie for me really gets going, is when they realize that General Waverly is the one who owns the inn. And it's a great surprise in the story that the general from the beginning of the film, who our characters Bob and Phil are so familiar with, he now actually owns this inn, is nearly bankrupt, and has used his pension to fund this inn. And on the one hand, we have this classic holiday movie trope of let's put on a show to save the day, right? I've watched dozens of Christmas movies where this happens, where I just watched one, a really horrible one with Chad Michael Murray in it, where this exact thing happens. a woman's parents own this bar in the town where she's from, and it's failing. So they put on this Chippendales style show with Chad Michael Murray to raise money. Again, I can't believe I'm comparing that to White Christmas, but again, obviously, this is where they got the idea.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, what I like about this is it's a much deeper commentary on the war, like The Best Years of Our Lives, right? It's this idea that in the 50s, post-war, people would come back and the country wasn't supportive of them or there for them in a way that people think or expect. And here they have this general who he needs financial help. So in addition to it being a really smart decision in the script just to move the plot along and to actually bring that show there and to give us a new location for it, it also acts as a commentary on the war.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that moment, when you do see him, it's not just a shock for Bob, it's a shock for us. And I think it does, like you said, it keeps the narrative moving. And it almost feels like when we're in Vermont, it's like, okay, what are we doing here? Where is this movie going? And this kind of wraps it all back in and brings about a beautiful second and third act to the movie and bringing everyone together in an interesting way.
And I like later the plan and the details of the plan of how they're going to bring their old army regiment back together and to stage the show. And I think that also gets at this idea, right, of him exploiting the general and trying to create some sort of feel-good moment artificially and to actually just give their act, Wallace and Davis, more success. I like that that comes into it too, because you can't just put on a show. There has to be some conflict. But this, I think, actually, again, feels really authentic to a post-war story.
Yeah, and it allows the story to have all of these different elements and I think appeal to every audience member possible. And I think that's where this being the number one film of 1954 comes in. Like, you have them commemorating the general, wanting to honor him. You have the romance between Bob and Betty, or the drama in that, and them trying to get that back together. There's drama everywhere. You have the general's wife who is always listening in on the phone.
Like, oh my God.
Okay, privacy.
She's so great, though. That actress is Mary Wicks. She has been in a number of things, really, over the years. Notably, maybe for you, in Sister Act, if you remember.
Vaguely.
She's also Shirley MacLaine's mom in Postcards from the Edge.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But she was in a bunch of TV shows from the time, too. The Lucy Show, MASH, Beverly Hillbillies, Donna Reed Show. She was in quite a bit.
Yeah, she's great here. Again, it's a silly purpose, but I think it works, because then it's like, okay, so she now thinks Bob and Phil are bad and what they're doing and trying to exploit the general now, which is not what happens. But I think, again, it just allows for all of these different narratives now to expand also. And so it's funny, it's cute, it's dramatic, it has everything in it. And that's really what you want in a good holiday movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And talk about another great thing you want in a holiday movie, a character misunderstanding something with her love interest and then needing to rush back to make it in time for the show at the end. I love this. I love when it happens in any of these movies. And here with Betty, like, there is so much drama between these two. Phil and Judy are trying really hard. They have this fake engagement, which is, again, hilarious
crazy
to me. All because of Betty and Bob and trying to get them together, which has been their goal the entire time. But when Betty realizes the truth about Bob and what they've been up to, and she sees him on TV and then realizes she has to go back to Vermont, I think that is really romantic. And again, what makes this such a great Christmas movie.
I mean, you would think that they could just, you know, talk like adults and not
Never.
Just mope around. It's so silly. I don't know. Nothing, again, is realistic, but it is. Yeah, it makes for a great climax at the end when she arrives back at the inn and she doesn't want Bob to know that she came back. She wants it to be a surprise, just like they're keeping it a surprise for the general, that everyone's going to show up in their military attire and him yelling at his wife that, you know, how could you have all of my things out for dry cleaning now for this big party? But again, I think just builds to this beautiful emotional conclusion that always gets me teary-eyed when he comes out and all of the men are there marching for him and kind of giving him his last hurrah as this man who has kind of fallen out and become a nobody in a way. You know, he was this big figure in the army and now he's living his quiet life. It's not a bad thing, but I think he wanted to feel that camaraderie again. And to see that in his face light up with him being teary-eyed too, I think it just totally gets to you.
I agree. I got really teary-eyed watching this too, because when you see that they're all there, they've surprised him, they're honoring him, but also that backdrop that they've staged is effectively the same that they had during the war. But now the war's over, and singing White Christmas again, making this a full circle moment, is just the perfect ending to this movie. And every time I've watched it, I do get teary-eyed, which is another marker of a great holiday movie.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't expecting to, or I didn't think I was going to, and then I did. And I'm like, okay, great. It still holds up. I still love it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other favorite scenes or moments or quotes, anything?
I think we've talked about most of my favorite scenes in the film. They're really the two performances early on, sisters, both with the Haynes sisters, and that little comedic moment between Wallace and Davis performing that song, Snow on the Train. I think that is just such a magical moment. And then at the very end, when they open the doors and they find that it has snowed, I know it's cheesy, but I love it every single time.
It's just the perfect ending. That's probably what I would say too, is, yeah, them lifting the garage and you just see, ugh, it's so beautiful. And then you have those costumes, like you said, that vibrant red with the white outline. Oh my God. It's just so gorgeous.
Yeah. Edith Head, she was the queen. She really was. Maybe our greatest costume designer.
Yeah, and I guess we can get into snubbed. I think we have talked about most of everything. That's my big snub, is how was this not nominated for costume design?
Well, what's even crazier here to me is that she's missing twice, because she also did the costumes in Rear Window and she didn't get nominated for that. But if you think of Rear Window and White Christmas both coming out this year, we also have two separate categories. We have costume design black and white and costume design color. She should have been nominated twice for costume design color.
And she won for Sabrina that year for black and white. But unless this is a thing where she can't be nominated in both categories, which would be insane, she should absolutely have been in there.
Yeah. I would probably actually give her the edge for White Christmas just because of the variety and the quantity and how iconic those are. But again, I mean, anything Grace Kelly wears in Rear Window is perfect and incredibly memorable. But I do love her win for Sabrina too.
Yeah, I was just going to say, of sheer numbers during those dance numbers, you have all of those dancers. And yet, if we're just looking at Vera Ellen and her costumes, you have so many beautiful dresses. You have the yellow, you have the reds and greens, and everything she puts on is just so extravagant looking.
I'm obsessed with the coat that she wears when they get to the inn in Vermont. It's that camel colored coat with the high collar.
Mm-hmm.
And she has the hat with a little bit of leopard print. Oh my God. It is a perfect outfit. I want that coat. I think it every single time I watch this. They don't make anything like that anymore.
I know. The tailoring is just exquisite.
Yeah. I think in terms of other snubs, I would also go to art direction color, just again, because of those sets, I think they're stunning and really just create this warm, nostalgic world in the film. And on that front too, cinematography color, because shooting this in VistaVision, expanding it, making it widescreen like that, blowing it up, our DP's Loyal Griggs, who, fun fact, won an Oscar for cinematography for your favorite movie we've covered, Shame.
Oh, well.
DPs always come back in the conversation.
He must have a really eclectic filmography, as cinematographers do, I feel like, of the people we talk about. Because, yeah, you have this quiet Western, and then you have this beautiful musical drama. Well, that's kind of crazy. It's good for him. I'll say that.
And then he ended up shooting The Ten Commandments later, also in Technicolor and in VistaVision.
Wow. Yeah.
I think I would give Vera Ellen a supporting actress nomination. I think we could make the case that she's supporting, or you could say four co-leads, but I think as the story shifts to focus a bit more on Bob and Betty, I think you can make the case that she's supporting, and I would give her a nomination.
I don't know if I feel that strongly about any of the acting to put them in, but I mean, I love her dancing. Like, can we give this a special choreography award somewhere? Like, I would do that.
At the time, supporting actress, though, I don't know. I think we could make room for her.
Just looking at all the nominations, this was the year of On the Waterfront and those three actors being nominated in supporting actor. If I'm trying to think of like, oh, could Danny Kaye have gotten in there? But again, I think this being a musical, like, yes, we had Judy Garland up for actress, but I don't think it was going to be as likely for any of them. But again, it was the biggest movie of the year. It had to have pulled some weight, even though it surprisingly only had one song nomination.
Well, and for acting, like, Bing Crosby was nominated that year before The Country Girl.
Right, right.
And then there's also, like, Grace Kelly was nominated, won for The Country Girl, even though I would have given her a nomination for Rear Window instead. All sorts of strange things going on. Thelma Ritter, not nominated for Rear Window, totally should have been. I know we cover this a bit when we did On the Waterfront, but just looking at this list again of nominees, I just think, oh, I would have changed these up quite a bit, I think.
Coming back to it after the fact. How do you think today's Academy would receive this movie?
What's interesting is that we have a big musical that's doing very well at the box office right now that I think will do pretty well in the Oscar race in Wicked. I wish that Wicked looked like White Christmas. I really do. I wish it was directed like White Christmas.
Yeah.
But I think that musicals that make people feel good and that have big stars attached to them, they can do really well with the Academy. And I was also thinking of the closest modern musical that we have that I think looks similar to White Christmas is La La Land. That is definitely shot in a way that wants to evoke this period. Absolutely. Like, Chazelle is, he said, and it's very obvious watching it, that that's what he's going for. And that didn't win Best Picture, but it did so well with nominations. So I don't know if it being a holiday film would maybe make the Academy go for it a bit less, or maybe it wouldn't be taken as seriously, but I don't know, on a technical level, I think it would still be embraced.
That comparison to La La Land, I actually thought about that during my viewing this time, of them having so many different dance numbers, and it's a part of their act, but it almost feels like filler in the movie, but that's just what they did. Like, that was part of the spectacle. And I was trying to think, like, what was the last movie that did this successfully? And I think that was La La Land. It's, you know, being drawn in, wanting to watch them dance because of their chemistry together and singing, whether it's live or not. But his colors, for sure, Chazelle in that movie, are also beautiful. But yeah, we don't have as much of that now, of just like the watching people dance just to watch them. But I think it's done very well in that movie. You have the whole sequence at the planetarium. But then here, it's just every time they're on stage, you can't help but just want to watch it for minutes on end. So I totally agree about that. I was kind of surprised that it did have a nomination. When I was looking at IMDb, there was like, oh, there's no way. And it's like, again, not the nomination I would have given it. But if we're thinking of the impact this movie had on 1954, I would say it's very much deserved.
Yeah, and I think the other time recently where we've seen directors actually let us watch characters dance is in Steven Spielberg's West Side Story. Mm-hmm. That I feel like is such a great example. And I know a lot of people have been returning to that this year because Wicked has come out. I think people are just revisiting it. And I don't think that was appreciated enough. It's such a strong movie musical.
I agree. When you first said movie musical at the box office, I was like, Amelia Perez? What are you talking about?
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, wait, that bigger one, Wicked.
Oh, Amelia. Amelia Perez makes less sense somehow than White Christmas.
We are not comparing those.
No, we are not. So if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
My Oscar absolutely goes to Edith Head for Best Costume Design. Again, the colors in this movie are so vibrant, but I think it's thinking back to all of the dresses, the gowns at the end, how they make it feel like a beautiful Christmas movie too with the costumes. And I think it was such a success. Should have been up there, maybe even won. I would have to like look at all the nominees, but I think she absolutely knocked it out of the park. What about you? Who would you give your Oscar to?
I would give my Oscar to Edith Head for costume design too. I feel like that's the right answer here. I guess there are more options, but the costumes are really what I think of when I think back on White Christmas, and I can't even pick a favorite. There's so many that I love, and she would have been such a deserving winner, like she would on many of her films that she's worked on, but here I think in particular.
Winning two Oscars for black and white and color in the same year would be insane. That would have been so cool to see.
Mm-hmm. If anyone could do it, though, I really do think it should have been her. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was our review of White Christmas. I very much enjoyed revisiting this, and I have plenty more holiday movies to get through. I'll have to watch Holiday Inn, but Christmas in Connecticut, which you mentioned with our favorite Barbara Stanwyck, is also a favorite of mine. So I'll have to get back to that one as well. But if you haven't seen White Christmas, it's on Prime. They also have a beautiful 4K disc out for the 70th anniversary, and I've debated getting that as well. So lots of options. Highly recommend watching.
Yeah, I'm so glad we got to cover this for its 70th anniversary and talk about another holiday film. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we will be doing a little Christmas release roundup. So we'll talk about some movies that are hitting theaters. We'll call it A Complete Baby Ratu. So we'll be talking about A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan biopic starring Timothée Chalamet, directed by James Mangold. We'll be talking about Baby Girl, which you just saw. I can't wait to talk about that. And of course, Robert Eggers' latest film, Nosferatu.
Such a wonderful group of movies. And yes, I loved Baby Girl. I can't wait to see the other two this week. It's going to be so much fun. We've been talking about these movies in terms of predictions all year. So it's finally time to see them.
Yeah, that will be a very fun conversation, I think, especially the Baby Girl segment. But thank you all for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, and TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. And for bonus content, you can subscribe at patreon.com/Oscar Wilde, where we also have some fun holiday merch. And you can also find updated Oscar nomination predictions at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. Happy holidays, and we'll see you next time.